Hello and welcome to another Future of Real Estate podcast. I'm Damien Wild. So MIPIM is done and dusted for another year. Security was up, irrational exuberance down, and numbers were strong. Of the 26,000 people there, almost 6,000 were from the UK. That said, it was pretty quiet on the commercial investment market front. The UK is uninvestable at the moment, according to one participant, but residential is undeniably hot. Homes England worked hard to connect money with opportunity, and there's plenty of both in that sector. But the cloud of Brexit hung heavily over the show. My favourite take on the impact that it's having and how it is likely to play out came from an unlikely source. While taking part in a speed dating session with a group of German mayors, and I'll tell you how that came about over a Stein sometime, they spent as much time quizzing me about Brexit as I spent interrogating them on investment opportunities in their regions. One sought to reassure me using a German saying which he translated as, "The soup's not going to be eaten as hot as it is served." I took that to mean the impact of Brexit and the Brextension, another word I picked up in Cannes, will not be as severe as it might feel today. I hope he's right. I'm sure we all hope he's right. Anyway, this week on the Future of Real Estate podcast, I'm introducing a new occasional feature, and I do hope it lasts, where I ask leading industry figures how they see the future of real estate. In the first segment, we'll hear from Cushman & Wakefield Global President John Forrester, who has strong views on prop tech. Let's hear from John now.
Well, for my soundbite, I'll take prop tech. I'm fascinated by the amount of airtime, column inches, whatever you want to call it, given over to prop tech at the moment. But at Cushman & Wakefield, and I think it's the same for a number of our peers, there's nothing that we do now that isn't entirely technology delivered or enabled. So if we start a new service line, open a new business, it's entirely based on technology. So it's not something separate. It's not a prop tech team or a new thing we're looking for. It's everything. And so I just find it interesting that there seems this fascination with something that is new and over there, where it's entirely here and what we're sitting on now.
So we're drawing a false distinction.
I think we are. I think it allows some people to be lazy in certain ways, which is sort of waiting for somebody to invent the panacea to their issues, where if you think about how we communicate, how we deliver our work, how we improve the speed and cost of our workflow. Everything is based on technologies that we've brought into the organization that actually are probably the best in class that are out there doing the same thing for every other major industry out there in service provision. So at Cushman, again, we're not a believer in inventing things. We think there are people out there who are better at inventing technology than we are. We're a great believer in partnering and using the best that's out there. And that's, you know, that's like breathing. So prop tech is not prop tech, it's doing real estate services work.
Ban the word?
Love to.
So for John, the future of real estate is banning the word prop tech and accepting that tech is merely an enabler to doing business in real estate. Wasn't it ever thus? So what would you do? Let me know on Twitter at Damien Wild or email me at damien.wild@egi.co.uk. But our principal guest this week is Tyler Goodwin, founder of Seaforth Land. The investor is picking up assets across central London, most notably the £165 million CAA house in Holborn. But he has also been an outspoken advocate for inclusion, telling a previous EG podcast how he is seeking a female number two for the business. Here, though, he talks about CSR and doing good while doing business, embracing an initiative by the Mayor's Fund for London to increase social mobility by broadening young people's understanding of the workplace. Seaforth is taking part in Access Aspiration, an employability programme designed to provide career support and guidance for 16 to 24-year-old Londoners who are making key decisions about their future careers, but they struggle to make links with employers. The programme aims to increase confidence, resilience and knowledge, and Goodwin believes benefits cut both ways. So Tyler, welcome back to the EG studio.
Thank you.
And we're recording this just days after MIPIM. I should probably ask you how MIPIM was for you.
Yeah, MIPIM was great. It was my first. So I think people were referring to me as a MIPIM virgin. 20 meetings in 3 days. It was pretty intense, but it was really enjoyable.
So everything you hoped for and more or less?
I'll definitely go back. There was the stereotypical behavior that you hear about from MIPIM, but I think you also found it didn't seem to me, you know, as bad as what some people had said in prior years. I actually found it was really productive use of your time. You have people coming from all over the world. I think there were 26,000 attendees. I maybe...
You met them all?
Yeah, exactly. I maybe went into the actual... the exhibition area once. I just didn't have time to do it. So I think, and people said this at the front end when I told them how many meetings I had lined up, and they said, well, you're not making any time to actually just explore MIPIM. And I think that's right. Probably next time I'll leave room to kind of appreciate the scale of the event itself.
Okay. Well, I'll see you back there next year, and many times before, I'm sure.
Great.
But I asked you in here today because of a different event that you spoke on. You came to our Future of London conference last year, and our charity partner on that event was the Mayor's Fund for London.
Yeah.
And you struck up a really productive conversation there, and it'd be great to hear more about where that's led.
Yeah, Patsy Shepherdson, who was leading the initiative back then, was on stage and just before we were going up, and I was just captivated. I mean, the story of what she's doing. And then she had a booth, so we started talking. And it was one of those things. It was the perfect timing. You know, our office manager, Farah Laborde, is responsible for leading the initiatives on the CSR side. And we'd been actually onboarding different CSR initiatives or corporate social responsibility initiatives. And when we saw this, it was like, I think it happened in like a week. Like Farah just looked at it, got on the phone, spoke with Patsy and said, okay, we're doing this.
Patsy said it was one of the quickest closes she'd experienced.
Oh, I mean, Patsy's like, I mean, the whole team there is just so high energy. So, you know, they're driven by passion. It's not, this isn't just a job for them. They know that they're making a difference.
And you said to me that it wasn't just something that you wanted to put money into. Yeah. You wanted to put time personally and invest in it. So what have you done? Just explain the project.
So at the start of the year, we decided that each member of the team, we should donate one day of the quarter, each quarter to, you know, some cause. And, you know, in speaking with Farah as a volunteer effort, and speaking with Farah, she said, you know, if we can do this as a team, then, you know, we thought, you know, leveraging the team and the team experience and it's almost team building, and it reminds everybody that we're not just in this for the money, that we, you know, if we can do well and do good, then it's all the better. And so when we met with Patsy, and she's got some great, or they have some great structures in the program, so you can follow a range of tracks, and you know, what we want to do is we want to try to combine this with mentorship. And so we've got, you know, the first track has already come through as a group of 10, and they come in and we spend the day with them, and we run through different presentations on our business, right, just to give them an overview. So I think we spent with lunch and, you know, a few or 4 hours presenting various elements of our business, and then give them some breaks because there's a lot to download. You know, this is real estate, you know, 101. And then what we followed on with is then the groups of 10 break down into groups of two, and they shadow us. So two at a time, they shadow us for 2 days. And we schedule meetings and projects for them. So they will sit in on good and bad meetings. And then we do a sort of post analysis at the end of each day.
How bad did a bad meeting get?
There was one really, like, we even in advance we said, okay, maybe we shouldn't get these kids involved in this meeting. Yeah, I won't get into the details of it, but it was with a service provider that we weren't particularly happy with. And so it wasn't bad, but it was a difficult conversation to have. And then I just thought, okay, this is a big part of our business. And it's important to give them some perspective and to say, look, I mean, the business is not all glamorous and it's not all great stories. It's like, you know, this is us in the weeds and this is day-to-day work. And the result was, I mean, at the start, these kids come in and they're fairly quiet and not quite sure
how
what
old
they should
they?
Expect. They're sixth form. So there are, you know, 17, 16, 17, 18. What's really great about these kids is they are kind of inner city youth who many of them may not have a, you know, not all of them. Some of them have parents that also went to university, but many of them might not. And so, you know, they understand because they hear how important it is to get a, you know, further education and post-secondary education. But there's no tangible sort of recognition of what does this mean, all right? And so these kids, when they sign up for the Mayor's Fund, they undertake that they're going to go to university. And so what does that mean, right? They understand the commitment on an education front, and what we're trying to give them is, okay, when we introduce each of our team members, we also talk about our education, our backgrounds, and our journeys. By the end, the light is, I mean, we can see that the light is going on. It's like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm really interested in this career. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, there are a bunch of different ways you can approach this career. You can go the RICS route and be a chartered surveyor, or you can pursue it in a finance route, or it's a technical design or development or construction or administrative and operations. There's a broad, this is what's great about our industry, is our industry is made up of a bunch of different people with different skill sets that are working together to achieve a goal. And so what's great for these students is you can be wired any way you want to be wired. You want to be a finance person, there's a great role for you. If you're creative and a designer, there's a great role for you. And so they just need to see it and see how, you know, the collaboration element is so important. But also, I think it inspires them. I mean, we've seen inspiration from out of these kids. It inspires them that, okay, this is why you're working so hard. That getting good grades gets you into a better school, which gets you on a better track for a future.
Okay. And can you see yourself working with them as apprentices, bringing them into the business in future?
100%. You know, the mentorship side, which I have also spoken with them about. If I look at my board of advisors and board of directors, a lot of those people are mentors that have been mentors of mine for 20 years. You know, mentorship is often the effort needs to come out of the initiative, and the effort needs to come out of the mentee, the commitment, because mentors are busy, but over time, mentorship starts working when the mentor starts feeling ownership in an individual's career, right? Where, you know that the advice you're giving and the introductions that you're making are really being put to good use, and then you start getting feedback of, hey, thanks so much for introducing me to that individual. He or she really did, you know, a great job, and looks like we're going to hire them. That's exciting, right? So, you know, as I've said with each of these pardon me, these students, is they should look at us as potential mentors and each individual in the organization, because if you're a finance person, then, you know, you might want to get closer with our CFO or, you know, for instance, even the meetings that we had. So we shared the contact details, and we encouraged them to write emails and a thank you note saying thank you very much for letting me sit in this meeting. So some of it is teach them the early stages of follow-up that are required in business, which is very different than the follow-up that you have at school. You get homework. You're told to do the homework by this date. You do it. This is more sort of self-initiating, which is, I think many of these kids are showing the self-initiative by getting involved in the program in the first place. So, yeah, 100%. Any of these kids could be kids that in the future will work for C4th Land.
And you're staying involved in the program? You'll have another wave come through?
Oh, I love it. I came out of the first wave and with these students and touring and meetings, and said, how do I do more, right? I mean, we're all really enthralled with it. You feel good. When you're done, you really feel good.
Well, I was going to ask that, and I'm sure the listeners can hear you smile there as you talk about how you reacted to it. So is it something personal that you get out of it, or is there something business related there as well?
No.
A future talent pool?
I mean, it's personal first. I mean, this is... I mean, you could tie it to CSR in a, you know, in a, for an element, and the CSR in this respect is, I think we do owe it to our communities to get involved. If you don't have your heart in it, you're not going to do it, right? I mean, this is, it's emotional. I mean, it really is emotional when you come out of these, you know, it's, you know, you really want to make sure that these kids understand, you know, how important it is to keep working hard and stick with it. And you know, I shared, you know, in my meetings with the kids, I shared some of my personal challenges when I was younger. And, you know, I didn't come from a family with a lot of money, and it can be difficult at times. And I think, you know, sharing that, where suddenly these kids, it's like, oh, okay. So you kind of get where we're coming from. It's hard work, and it's going to continue to be hard work. But, you know, in the end, it's going to be worth it, and kind of inspiring them for it to be worth it. So, yeah, I think there might be a business element to it, but really it's not about that. It's about giving back to the community. I mean, in our industry, the real estate industry doesn't have a great reputation in the community, I think, generally put, and that's not just London, that's a global phenomena, right? And so the more outreach we do where we're actually touching people's lives and having an impact, you know, on a granular, on a grassroots basis, I think the better.
Okay, thank you. So a principle-based decision, yeah, there. You seem to make a lot of principle-based decisions as well. I think last time you were in the studio with Sam McCleary, my colleague, you talked about a hiring process that you're undertaking that I gather you're nearing the end of, and you wanted a certain type of person.
Yes. So for this, so we've got two retained searches on right now with Ferguson Partners. The first one is for really my number two leadership in the group. You know, we're calling the title the COO, the Chief Operating Officer, but the job description is the same as mine, to help build out the business, and lead acquisitions, for the business. And then the number two is a director of development. Both are the job description. It requires us to, you know, hire a woman for both roles.
Okay, and
it's going well.
It's going well.
Yeah, it is going well, and I really do. I mean, it's funny because you know, it's taken a while, and I think in it taking a while, it sends a very clear message that we're going to wait until we get the right hire, the right individual. We actually have an offer out on the director of development, you know, very capable, you know, woman that we're excited, if she ends up signing on board. We're down to two women in the COO number two role.
And on these podcasts, and our most recent podcast was with Amanda Clack, who's just published a book on managing diversity and inclusion in real estate. So there's a real focus on this area. But I can't imagine you wouldn't have had any pushback at all when you made that that announcement.
Well, you just came from MIPIM, right? And so, I mean, I don't think it's... I think if you want to do a sampling, that's where you do the sampling. What's our
industry? 88% men, I think, there, and probably 97% of them were wearing blue suits, and sadly, I was among them.
That's our sample, and that's the problem. And so the only way that this changes is through, you know, an affirmative effort. But more than that, you know, we design and build buildings for humankind, 50% of which are women. If you look at investment decisions for investment committees, if it's dominated by a bunch of men, then you always run a risk of a testosterone fueled investment committee, which is not a good thing. And diversity for, you know, for our clients is also important. If your clients are pension capital, you know, 50% of their, you know, clients or therefore pension contributors are going to be women and 50% men. And so it's, I think for a bunch of reasons, it's really important to commit to it. But it's also, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, I believe that, you know, the discrimination in our workplace starts at hiring, not in ours, but in our industry. starts at hiring and what track you're putting these candidates on. And, you know, do they get the top jobs or the second job or the third tier job? Are they going directly? If you're an agency, are you going into the acquisitions, the sort of, you know, the star rated role? Or are they putting you into asset management? Or, you know, and all of these roles are great roles, but there is this sort of perceived pecking order that, you know, we think also creates a sort of, the wrong messaging. And so, you know, why this senior role is so important to me is that, you know, we're committed to building out 50% of our team as women and 50% as men. And the only way you're going to do that is that women that we hire can see that there's no glass ceiling.
Okay, Tyler, thank you. Look forward to hearing about those appointments and perhaps the appointment of a first apprentice in time as well.
Love it. Thank you.